I define networking as a proactive approach to relationship development. It's connecting people and creating a community with the aim of all parties mutually benefiting. So, you know, it's not what happens at networking events. It's more of a skill that's practiced and honed throughout years.
That's Adam Connors in the latest episode of the All Things Risk podcast. Welcome and welcome back to another episode of the All Things Risk podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I'm your host. This is my show. This is the premier long-form podcast about risk, uncertainty, resilience, and randomness that you will find. We explore topics in depth in the hopes of helping you, informing you, and hopefully entertaining you, because this stuff, uncertainty, risk, and opportunity are all around us. And I think we can all get better at understanding these phenomena and using them to make better decisions and ultimately to live better lives. This conversation that I bring to you today is all about networking. And not only is it about networking, but this is a conversation that I think will completely change the way you think about the topic. Yes, we all know that networking is important. It's one of those things we should probably all do more of, but don't. But let me tell you this. Networking is not about attending so-called networking events. It's not about how many LinkedIn connections we have. As you'll hear, true networking is about developing authentic connections with others and starting these from the vantage point of giving, not taking. And it's also an art that is increasingly being lost. Fortunately, my guest, Adam Connors, is bringing it back. Adam is a master networker and the founder of a firm called NetworkWise. He has a diverse background, having worked in finance, in recruitment, and as an entrepreneur. But the thing that's connected his endeavors is his ability to connect with people in a deep, meaningful way. And he joins me in this episode to talk networking and the power of a strong network. And from a risk and uncertainty perspective, a strong network provides us with the ability to pivot quickly in the event of a setback that we might not have expected, as well as the ability to take advantage of opportunities that we didn't even know were out there. What's even better, as you'll hear from Adam, is that great networkers aren't born, they're made. And Adam discusses all of this and much more, including his background, the importance of reputation and credibility. We talk career paths. He has worked with famous athletes and entertainers, and he shares a little bit about that. But the heart of this conversation is about the premise and power of networking. We get into networking for introverts, networking, risk, and uncertainty, the power of giving, and a whole lot more. Really enjoyed Adam. We, I think, connected in also a very deep and meaningful way in this podcast episode. And also because I think, much like what we're trying to do here with risk and uncertainty and long-form conversations, he's all about that with regard to networking and connecting with people. And I think you'll enjoy the perspective that Adam brings, and I think you'll learn a lot from him. So let's get right into it. Here's Adam Connors. Adam, welcome to the All Things Risk podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to be here. Excited to actually interview you, hopefully, as well as share my story, whatever that might be.
Yeah, no, it's it's great. You know, we had a short conversation a few weeks ago, and I loved it. And I thought, yeah, this guy's got a lot of good stuff to say and to share with my listeners. So I'm stoked that we can make this happen.
Yeah, you turned the tables on me. I was calling to get you on my show, and somehow here we, you know, and somehow here we are. You were fantastic, and I'm sorry to steal your thunder quickly, but whoever's listening, they're listening to a really good guy. Ben was kind enough We were referred by Tom Harden, a friend of mine who was actually also on your show, Tipper X. And, I'm new to this whole podcast world. And, you know, Tom had some really nice things to say about you and how comfortable you made him feel and how easy to speak with and just generally about your show. And, you were kind enough to carve out some of your time to help me with what I was doing. So that goes really far in my book, and I appreciate that. And if there's anything that I can do to help you in any way, shape, or form, I'm at your service.
Thanks, Adam. I really, really appreciate that. Yeah, very kind words. So thank you very much. And we'll, you kind of tell about a person and connections. And we're going to be talking about networking. And I think there's something around that we can explore and get into. Before we do that, though, I wanted to explore your background and get to understand, how you've got to be where you are and all of that good stuff. So, you're calling in from, you're based in New York, right?
I'm based in the New York area, yep. Hoboken, mm-hmm. Which I like to call the sixth borough because, I would almost argue that it's more of a borough than some of the other, boroughs that surround Manhattan.
Okay, cool. Did you grow up?
I'm from Westchester. Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, go for it.
I'm from Westchester, New York, right. Which is outside of, it's about, 30, 40 miles outside of Manhattan. After college, I went in Connecticut. I got an opportunity to work after college. I did get an opportunity to work for Cantor Fitzgerald, which at the time was the top floor of the World Trade Center. And Hoboken has it's called the PATH train, and the PATH train from Hoboken goes right into the World Trade Center. Mm. So that was the original allure to Hoboken, and that was 20 years ago.
Mm. And what did you, I know you got involved in investing and business, and what did you aspire to be when you were growing up in Westchester?
So for the record, I'm still aspiring.
We all are.
Yeah, I want to be very clear about that. So if at any time I go on a diatribe, just cut me off. But I have always been about trying to help people and make connections. Mm-hmm. And I went to school at Quinnipiac College. It's now Quinnipiac University, over 20 years ago. And I graduated with a degree in sociology and a couple of minors also. But the whole idea was I'm going to help the world and I'm really going to make a difference. So I, after doing two internships, I realized that you really can't make a difference, at least in my perspective, unless you really can't help more people unless you can help yourself, i.e. you have money. And you really don't make any money in the world of sociology and a lot of these social services. So I quickly figured, all right, well, where can you make money? New York City, and what's New York City predominantly known for? And that's Wall Street. Mm. So having no experience, I did get an opportunity to work for one of these kind of boiler room type shops, where you got to get your Series 7 and you make phone calls and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of pursued that route until a buddy of mine and I discovered that the firm that we were working for was not on the up and up, which I immediately the next day went in and quit. Mm. And if you want to start talking about risk, I could talk about risk all through my life and my career as well. But, never leave a job without a job. Mm-hmm. Something that
so you just quit the next day without anything lined up?
100%. Wanted nothing to do with what they were doing, and don't want to say their name. I actually got some of the best experience I've ever had. doing your cold calling. Yeah. When you call 200 people a day and you just get no. Yeah. I can't begin to tell you that every job I've ever had since has been easier.
I have a very similar story, as by the way, very early on in my career. Yeah, yeah. Similar to you, to you. You know, worked for what I found out to be an unethical organization, and I quit cold turkey as well. And similar, you know, environment. I think slight, obviously some differences, when you're working in an environment like that, and you know there's something that happens that crosses, you know, an ethical or a line of your own, you know, values, then I think you've got no choice in some in those respects, but not everybody does that. So I was going to explore a little bit of your perceptions of the world of Wall Street, because I see a lot of this with people who maybe not, you know, the environment that you describe probably was one in which the ethical line was pretty clear, and you know, but we've often talked, I've talked with Tom about the slippery slope, right? You mm-hmm. take some crumbs off the table, and then it becomes easier to do it again and again and again. And I'm interested in your journey from that world to what you talked about earlier, connecting people and helping make the world better, and all of that good stuff.
Do you want me to give you a quick synopsis? Because there's a lot of different things.
Okay.
I'll give you high level, and at any point interject on when you'd like more.
Let's go high level, and sounds like a plan.
All right, let's do it. So from there, got an opportunity to work for Cantor Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. It was a great opportunity. I worked in their operations, their back office, great place to start. And I think I'll kind of dovetail into networking here, because it was a remedial role, but I made it more, because what I would do is I would come into the office a couple hours before everybody else. I would get my work done, and then what I would, because I thought I wanted to be a trader like everybody else on Wall Street. And then what I would do is in the back office, you solve the problems for trades that went awry. And then I would go up to the trading floor, and I would personally speak with the traders or the brokers at the time that had some of these issues and explain it, because it gave me an opportunity to get one-on-one FaceTime with them, because we were on different floors, and also explain what they did so it wouldn't happen again.
Right. So when you say went awry, does that mean that they did, you know, they lost money? They didn't?
Well, mm-hmm. it depends. So trades, again, I don't want to get too mm-hmm. technical for mm-hmm. those who aren't in finance, but you know, the trades would fail. So mm-hmm. maybe the right numbers weren't, you know, the one party, you know, thought that they were buying, you know, 100 million, and the other party might have thought they were buying 90 million.
Yeah.
Or maybe there was direct, you know, they were wiring it to the wrong accounts. And there's a whole array of, because the action, this was before a lot of the algos, and everything was just happening so fast, and there's so many different transactions going on, and there's just a lot of room for errors. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you know, I did that, and then I got an opportunity to get up on the desk and get on the trading floor. And again, I'll fast forward quickly to a serendipitous day where my boss at the time is the one who invented eSpeed, or he was one of the founding people behind eSpeed, which is one of the first electronic brokerage firms. And mm-hmm. we're sitting there and we're beta testing it. And I turned to him and I said, Dave, I said, this system that you're building here, I go, it kind of eliminates what we do, huh? Mm. He goes, yeah. I go, what do you think of the future of this industry? He goes, not really that good. And I said, all right. I said, all right, great. And, you know, he's a good guy. I'm walking home from the path, leaving work that day, and I bump into a gentleman by the name of Jim Zagelmeyer. Jim Zagelmeyer was a guy that got me one of my first real jobs when I was in college working at 9X. He ran a recruiting firm. And he bumped into him, hadn't seen him in years. He says, what are you up to? And I said, oh, you know, this is what I've done. This is what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. He says, oh, he goes, well, you know, I run this national recruiting firm, and we'd love to start a division in financial services. You want to head it up? And I said, well, I've never recruited before. He goes, don't worry about it. And I said, well, all right, well, you know, can you train me? Can you do it? He goes, no. He goes, how about this? He goes, I'll give you half your salary. And I really wasn't making much at the time. Mm-hmm. I think maybe I was making $60,000 or something like that. And he says, I'll give you half your salary. I'll give you a desk, a phone, and a couple of leads. And maybe we'll give you some percent of that. And I said, well, you know what? I just had this talk with the boss that told me that there's not really much upside in this industry. I'm young in my career. Let's give it a shot. 2 weeks later, there I was sitting at a company called Leafstone. Hmm. So that was interesting. And again, I'll try to be quicker, but I thought that was
important. No worries. Take your time. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a short amount of time, I was very fortunate enough to be pretty successful. Recruiting is all about making connections, I guess, mm-hmm. knowing good people, knowing the jobs, knowing the companies, and making connections. So I built a temporary business as well as a permanent division. And then the boss that recruited me, he left. Mm-hmm. And the other guy who I was rolling into, he ended up going to another firm, and he recruited me to come over and do the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So from there, I did a pretty good job, built up a nice little business for this gentleman, but I've always had like an entrepreneurial itch, if you will. Hmm. And at the time, I got recruited for another place to do the same thing. And I got thrown this time, for the first time in my life, a really nice financial package. And I turned it down to start my own business with another gentleman that was working for me. And we founded a gentleman that we knew offered to fund our business. Mm-hmm. The short story is 2 weeks later is when the financial crisis hit, and he was not able to come through in the capital that he had promised, but he did come through on half of it. And it was just a very tough time. We're talking 2007 mm-hmm. is when that happened. But we get through that, for the most part. We grew somewhat quick, three offices, bunch of people, had some people in India, and then we got crushed. We went, I think 7 months without making a penny. We lost a significant amount of money, lost employees, and my partner was not in a position where he could kind of sustain that, and we parted. Great guy, still friends with him to this day. I was actually just with him last week, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So he parted, and him and I actually started another business that did career counseling. He went to China. He started doing that. That was going well as well. And at a certain point, I realized it was time that I had to wrap up the recruiting world. The world had changed. The job market had mm-hmm. changed significantly. And we could talk more about that, too. And the whole reason that I really enjoyed recruiting had changed. And again, if you want, we can get into that. I'm happy to kind of dive into that later.
Maybe we can get into some of that now. And your story strikes some parallels with a couple of other guests, but one in particular was a guy by the name of Eric Newton, who was a divorce lawyer for a long time. And so he saw the kind of the back end of, the of a relationship breaking down. And he got into the world of relationship counseling, advice, etc. And he took a lot of lessons. I think he took a lot of lessons away from the experience of a marriage breaking down, for example. And it strikes me that you're trying to connect people in the recruitment world, right? So, joining, a skill with a need. And I imagine that's fairly interesting, but after a while, perhaps, it becomes transactional, or I don't know, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, maybe just those you're actually not in a position where you can, influence how employers are setting up their roles, or how maybe candidates are looking at their career options. I don't know. I'm guessing, but let me know if any of that hits.
Hits some yes of and no. But mm-hmm. the real impetus for the move was the dynamic had changed because of technology, and technology right. to some degree was fantastic because mm-hmm. it got you an opportunity to have so many more candidates. But the downside of this, what happened is the clients were only, they got spoiled by paper in mm-hmm. terms of like what was on that paper, and being able to see all the people that went to these Ivy League schools, and they mm-hmm. got hung up on some of these degrees, and they forgot about what they were really paying me for. And that was really to make the connection. And that's what I loved about it, because I got the opportunity with a lot, you know, and speed became the name of the game as opposed to making the right connection. So whereas I used to be able to talk with the people that were doing the hiring and really get to know them and know what makes them, because a lot of times the best hires were when I had to kind of oversell them, where they would tell, I would say, hey, listen, here's why you need this. But it got to the point where all people cared about was the paper itself. And it really, I just couldn't fight it. So I became, to some degree, I don't want to say I'm a dinosaur, but I just lost the passion for doing it.
Again,
I cut you off. Apologies.
No, it's fine. So it became transactional, I guess, is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. There's some major companies and you know, household name companies where I've built the entire departments and I built them because of those types of relationships. So those were great. And those were, you know, they're still, I'm not even in recruiting, but I still help. You know, I just talked to one of them just yesterday, as a matter of fact, because they valued that, and I don't charge them, but, you know, I just introduced them to a big heavy hitter. They didn't even need a resume and they got on the phone and they liked them, because they understand. Mm-hmm. So,
cool. It's an interesting background, and I value people who take time to, you know, get to know. I mean, if I'm thinking about working with someone, say I'm recruiting, you know, I want somebody to spend some time with me and understand, you know, what it is I'm looking for and get to know me as a person, as a hiring manager or whatever. And but if I have, you know, a big team and I'm just trying to get roles filled, then there's less scope for that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I also had some fallout with some clients because there would be candidates that they wanted to hire that I encouraged the candidates actually not to move forward with them because I look at everything as it's my reputation. Your reputation walks through the door before you do, and if somebody doesn't work out, it's more cost effective to not hire a person that's not going to work out than hire someone that I know. Like, I know what their drivers are.
Sure.
Right.
So you said something interesting just now. I know where their drivers are. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because you've leveraged that concept a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. So getting back to let's just use myself as an example. So I'm this young kid that all they wanted to do is make money, and I think I want to be a trader. And everybody on Wall Street, everybody wanted to either be an investment banker, a trader, or an analyst. Those are kind of like the three roles people knew about. And this is kind of before risk was really kind of as prevalent as it is, or compliance or any of that kind of stuff. So those are the roles. Everybody thinks they want that. So, you know, I always had a standard group of questions that I would ask people. And I would always ask people, oh, hey, what do you want to do? And truth be told, I didn't give a shit. Because my follow-up questions a couple minutes later, once they got a little more comfortable, because everybody wants to tell me what they think they want to do, is I would ask them, well, you know, what are your hot points? What are the things that are really most important to you? And that person that before told me they want to be a trader, that, you know, then 10 minutes later in the conversation, they tell me that they really want creativity in a job. And they really want freedom, you know, and they want to be able to, you know, come and go. And I'm exaggerating, but not really. And, you know, those are contradictory things that they're talking about. So the hot point is really what they want, not the job title. So a lot of times that's how what made me, I guess my best successes were matching the hot points with the right role. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. That's very, very cool. And interesting, because were most of the people that you're working with, were they younger? Were they newer graduates?
No. Which is
okay.
So funny.
You know, interesting. So, yeah.
I mean, it was pretty mixed. You know, we did everything from managing directors down to analysts.
Right.
The majority of the types of hires that were using us were probably like mid-level.
Right.
You know, your associate to VP, you know, someone making anything from like 85 grand to, you know, 400 or 500. It's kind of like the sweet spot.
In your experience in that work, why do people leave jobs? Is it primarily to get a bump in salary, or was there something else that they were looking for?
They think so. They think it's about salary. At the end of the day, what it really boiled down to was, I think a lot of times was challenge. you know, a lot of people kind of lost the challenge, or maybe it was just the management that they had, you know, so, and then, and it also depended on, because I was more of a generalist, it's a tough question to just answer with a blanket statement, because it also depended on what level that you were talking about. So, for the most part, I'd say those are probably two of the most prevalent reasons.
Do you talk to a lot of people who you felt were just really in the wrong career?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, and that also is kind of what brought me into doing what I'm doing now. It happens so often. People were, you know, a lot of times people don't know what's out there. They don't know. You have no idea. You live in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And, you know, your figure was either a parent, a relative, or someone around the block. So you didn't know, and you're taught to be safe. You know, hey, be an accountant, be a teacher. And again, nothing wrong with these, but, you know, instead of say, hey, figure out what's out there and then know what you want to do, you know, you're kind of told, or you just kind of follow the lead of someone that you would admire. And I can't begin to tell you how many people pursued that I spoke with. Probably I saw more lawyers than anything, or people with MBAs that thought by pursuing this, because they were very smart and they were logical and that they could do it, that it was in their best interest and it would serve them. And instead, it kind of got them farther and farther away from being in touch with who they were.
Cool. Well, and you just talked about it earlier that, you know, there were these three roles: trader, investment banker, analyst. And if that's all you know, then you're not going to really, you're not going to be venturesome and look elsewhere. And meanwhile, we were talking about this before we started recording, there, you know, the economy now is totally different from where it was 10, 15 years ago. There's so many different career options and paths, but a lot of it isn't, the path isn't trailed, isn't blazed yet for people. And that's, you know, that's kind of scary for many.
Well, there's that. And then I'm going to completely botch all of these statistics and numbers, because it's been a few years since, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you something to ponder.
Yeah.
And, oh God. So this is going back to at least this, when I had read this, it was, I think it was Department of Labor and Statistics, back in like 2013 or 14, the average. So I'm almost 44. And so that puts my parents, I think that they're almost 70, just to put things into perspective. Mm-hmm. So my parents' generation, the average job for somebody in their generation, I believe at that time, was about 1.5 jobs, maybe two. And now we're talking average, and now you're going back into, you know, when the only the father worked, and the you stayed at the factory, or you did something for, you know, your entire life, you got the pension, you know, and I can tell you flat out, my father had his own company and my mother worked for the same job when she got out of college until she had retired. So that statistic falls right in line. Okay, let's move it now to the next generation, you know, our generation, my generation. And the average job, the jobs they said that you would have before retirement would be somewhere around 9 jobs before you retire. Okay, so there's a pretty big big jump there. Now, they said the following generation, which I think would fall into the millennial world, they're saying the average millennial would have around 17 jobs before they retire. That is, if they're in a position where they can retire. Now, think about it. That's the world is changing. Companies aren't doing benefits like they are, and, you know, you've got, at least in the states I'm talking about here, so the landscape, you know, technology has changed things in some ways in the good and some, you know, not so good. But it's leveling the playing field. It's making things more entrepreneurial. How I kind of dissect that is, you need to have a skill set of knowing how to get a job. You know, you go on to the days of having a limited linear skill set.
Yeah, that's right. And if we talk about risk and uncertainty, I think the whole piece around, well, if you have this skill and you're an accountant and you're a lawyer or whatever, you're still going to be faced with all kinds of change and uncertainty, and you know, you could be in a role for, you know, 2-3 years and really like it, but a change happens, a merger, an acquisition, you know, a change in leadership, and all of a sudden you're looking for something else. So
all the time, I can't begin to tell you, whenever you feel that you are the most secure, in my opinion, you are the most risk. Like, that's risk. You know, forget about taking chances. I don't know. I think when you're feeling is the most confident that you are, is the time that, in my opinion, you are most vulnerable and most personally at risk.
Food for thought. Definitely food for thought. Yeah, you know, the world moves fast, and I'd like to talk about networking and your kind of transition from what you were doing to this becoming this networking expert, because you're right. You know, one of the ways to manage this is you have to have a skill set which is about looking for your next job, you know.
So before jumping into that, if you don't, there's a couple things that I'd like to do, because I actually, sure. that was just one, you know, since the days of recruiting, I've actually done a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And I think it does
parlay
to what we're talking about. But one other thing, getting back to the recruiting, and I'll pull this back together, is one of my other, I had a standard list of questions that I would always ask people, you know, and one of the questions that I would ask people that I was really impressed with, you know, the heavy hitters, the executives, and even it was slanted a little more towards the seasoned people. But I would ask them, you know, what would you do different? You know, going back, it was just for my own curiosity. It had nothing to do with getting a job. And the universal answer, outside of the joking around and saying, oh, I wouldn't have gotten onto Wall Street, was I would have either built a bigger network or I would have nurtured my network more. So that was, you had asked me earlier, one of the times that we were speaking about, you know, have I always been a networker? And I think to some degree, yeah, but I'll tell you, that really locked, you know, since asking those questions, that really solidified to me the value of that. And it made me really want to kind of delve more into it, read more, get more books on that, you know, study people that were successful, things of that nature. So now let's fast forward. Okay, the recruiting, I'm getting ready to sell the firm. Before doing that, I've done a decent amount of speaking, and there was a guy that I knew that had a company out in California, and I spoke at one of his conferences for these like hyper kids, and he had offered me an opportunity to be the CEO of one of his companies, and I was about to do that. Obviously, it would be a pretty big move, you know, to doing something totally different and moving out to the West Coast. And a really good friend of mine, who actually used to be a client of mine, and it goes back into networking. That's how we originally met, was through recruiting. He was a client and quickly became a confidant and a good friend. He said, don't do that. Come work with me. And he used to run a $6 billion conduit. And at the time, he had went and started his own hedge fund. And one of his businesses that he had was a lending platform that lent money to athletes and entertainers. And you know, I love sports, and I'm like, wow, that sounds awesome. And it was really cool. You know, for like 2 weeks, it was cool, because then you're around all these athletes and entertainers, people that you've seen, you know, how some of these people were household names, but, you know, the allure of working with athletes got real tiresome real quick, because they're just high maintenance. Right. Some of them are great. And I hate to make again the blanket statement, but for the most part, they were needy.
What was the market need there? They just needed to get quick credit for their next Ferrari or something like that, or what was the?
Some of them, yeah. I mean, yeah. You'd be, you know, there were tons of child support issues. There's tons of. I mean. You know, these are athletes that their whole life, things have been given to them, and people have been at their beck and call, and they've never really had to do anything. And the life of an athlete is, you know, the tenure is barely tenure, and they're surrounded by bad people that are just takers.
Yeah.
And as soon as that they don't have the allure anymore, what good are they to people? And that's a problem. So they mismanage their money. They fall on hard times. They get I mean, anything you can think of. You know, there's a 30 for 30, an ESPN thing called Broke.
And I was going to ask you about that. Have you seen that?
Yeah, actually, the gentleman, Keith Klingscale, I'm probably botching your name, Keith, I'm sorry. He's good friends with the gentleman that I was working with,
right?
That was doing the lending of the money. And actually, they were the original money behind him. So know it very well, very familiar with it. So we did that. You know, we had a lending platform that was cool. And then we got into, there was the NFL concussion case. This is a football over here in the States where a lot of these guys got banged up and they're pretty bad. And we quickly became the largest advancers on that case, where we advanced them money against their the money that was promised to them. It's called post-settlement, meaning it's already won. And there's less risk from an investment standpoint there. So we did that. We built that portfolio. We sold it. Then we got into a couple of other businesses. We lent money in merchant cash advance. And we did all these like funky, esoteric, specialty finance type business, which I had no experience in whatsoever. My friend was really kind enough to take a flyer on me in teaching me this business, and it worked out. We did well and built up a couple of businesses, and then we did another business. We did some litigation and finance stuff, again, all in the same kind of realm. This is for the past few years, and during that time, him and I also we got involved in medical marijuana in states. There's some states that it's legal. We had a grow facility with another guy. That was an interesting play. We also had a we sold that. We also invested in an insurance agency that catered to athletes and entertainers. We've just been involved in a lot of different businesses,
right?
And meeting a lot of different people, and some did well and some didn't. And you know, that's been the game. But the common theme behind everything that I've done has been people and connecting people and getting access to some of those people through other people, and couldn't have had some of the successes that we did had it not been for the network that I had built. And you know, again, all coming back to networking. So that's my quick way to get you to where I am now. And what I'm doing now is I've created a company. It's called NetworkWise. And NetworkWise, and I'm even going to rewind this back to what we talked about. One of the first questions you asked me is what I want to be when I grow up. And I wanted to make an impact on the world. And the overarching goal of NetworkWise is to create a movement, a social movement. And this movement is about having people, the ultimate goal is to have people go into every interaction when they meet somebody with the mindset of how can I benefit this person? And that's the overall, and I can get into that. I don't want to bore you with all the details unless you're interested in hearing them, but the whole idea is, and it all starts again with a mindset and networking, and the premise of networking, it's not about, you know, what people can do for you, but it's really about it,
right.
It's a foundation is what you can do
for others. Yeah, I think this is worth talking a little bit about. When I was thinking about networking, so the very first thought when Tom introduced us and I looked at your site, or I just, you know, heard networking. So my very first thought was LinkedIn. And I have, you know, I've got a lot of connections on LinkedIn. And aren't I a great worker? and then I thought, wait a minute. I'm not so sure about that, because I'm not so sure that I could, you know, pull up any say 2/3 or 1/3 of my vast LinkedIn network and ask them a question that I would get an answer that's useful. So maybe we just go back to first principles. What do you mean by networking? What is networking? What does good networking look like?
Wow, that is such a loaded question.
That's all right.
You know, pardon me?
No, I said that's all right. I'll blank canvas for you to tackle that.
All right. Well, it's something that I could be talking about for hours, so I'll try to kind of to be as precise as possible.
Sure.
I define networking as a proactive approach to relationship development. Mm-hmm. It's connecting people and creating a community with the aim of all parties mutually benefiting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not what happens at networking events. It's more of a skill that's practiced and honed throughout years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's building relationships. It's finding a common interest. It's it's helping. It's giving. It's a shared. It's sharing ideas. It's sharing leads. It's sharing information. You know, I guess the best way to think about what is a network, it's a powerful system that offers three unique advantages. It gives the advantage to private information. Mm-hmm. It gives you access to a diverse skill set and ideas. And what a network also really does, it gives you power and influence. Mm-hmm. I could just keep going and going. I don't know if you want me to.
No, keep going. This is good. This is good stuff. Yeah. This is your domain. So absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, think about the power of a network. Think about what can be done, you know, if you've surrounded yourself with great people. Mm-hmm. I honestly could just keep going mm-hmm. on and on and on. The higher the quality of your network, you know, the greater magnitude of your success. Mm. It's just true. I'm sure everyone here knows who Tony Robbins is. Mm-hmm. Tony Robbins, his idol was a guy by the name of Jim Rohn. Mm. And Jim Rohn, I'm probably going to botch this quote, but you'll get the genesis of it. He said essentially that, you are the aggregate of the five people you spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, money. It's your health, your well-being, how you think of things. And that's your nucleus. That's your nucleus network. Mm. But there's all different kinds of networks too. And a lot of people, I have this thing, this template that I've built. It's called a sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. And what I've come to notice is that people, and you pointed this out right away, when you talked about LinkedIn, people think about their networks. I would always ask people, hey, how many people are in your network? Mm-hmm. And you've got one school of thought that says, oh my God, I've got probably about 650, 700 people in my network. And then you got the other school that they don't think that they've got, and I really don't have any. Mm. And that's actually not true. That there's a happy medium there somewhere. And what I do is I help people to really break down to first and foremost understand what is networking, which is so important. Mm-hmm. And then what are you working with? You know, if you start thinking about the network, you start thinking about the people that are kind of in your sphere of influence. First think about, there's obviously families to give in, and I try to not focus on that because, mm-hmm. Maybe sports that you've played or hobbies that you've had. Think about there's things that are called fringe friends, and mm-hmm. fringe friends are actually the most important elements of all networking. Hmm. Because it's your friends' friends is essentially what the fringe friends are, or that one person removed. Mm-hmm. That's the hidden job market right there. Mm-hmm. Those are the people with the ideas that are going to come up with ideas that you're not necessarily familiar with because you're not in that echo chamber that we talked about earlier. It's getting outside of your regular sphere. Mm. That's part of your network. So there's alumni groups that are your networks. There's mm-hmm. if you're involved in any kind of religious affiliation, that's a network. Mm-hmm. Think about people that speaking of alumni, work alumni, people that you work with in work. Think about vendors that might be servicing you. There's all these. If you start really breaking them down, and then the average person, according to Dunbar's laws, essentially, you've got roughly 150 people is kind mm-hmm. of really mm-hmm. what your network is. So, yeah, that's high level networking.
Right, right. And we often don't think about all of those things. And but when you think about the opportunities that come up, so for example, this conversation, it mm-hmm. started with a conversation between Tom and I, and that now we're connected. But I didn't really know that Tom knew you, right? So this, I think there's that level of those nodes that that permeate from the different people that we know, who knows what's behind there, and that somebody in that network knows something or someone or can provide some help, and vice versa.
You're hitting the nail on the head. I had a guy on my show a couple weeks ago by the name of Bob Wu. Bob Wu's a good friend of mine, great guy, a deep thinker. And I love, he summed it up, and again, I'm not good with quotes, but it's something to the effect of, every time that I meet somebody, in my head, I'm thinking that this is not the only time I'm ever going to see them. And it doesn't matter if they are serving him food in a cafeteria or if the CEO of a company. So he goes in thinking about, you know, again, how can I help somebody? And you know, what's the most value that I could provide for this person? Because they're going to boomerang back in my life at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we talk a bit about, so you talked about giving and the importance of giving. Can we explore that a little bit more?
Yeah. Anything in particular that?
So you just talked about, you know, leading with giving. What can I give to this individual, and why is that so important? Because I think a lot of us, and in a lot of the behaviors, it's more about what can I take. And I'm being very blunt about that. But I do, you know, you do see that type of behavior. Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, when somebody connects with me on LinkedIn or wherever, it's always, oh, I want to sell you this, and I want to, I've got this great candidate that you might want to hire, or, you know, this sort of thing. And you kind of, sometimes that hits the mark, but sometimes more often than not, it doesn't.
That's a huge turnoff for me. I call those people either ask holes or take holes. and I really, it's disgusting. It's kind of sad. I think maybe that's more societal, though. And again, I don't want to get too deep, but now we're more of an individualistic society. In Europe, it's a little better, I think, where there's, depending on where you are, where it's more about the community. It's a shame. It's selfish. And a lot of people, they don't get it. When I talk about giving, I mean, you know, just we can all benefit. We all bring something to the table. And a lot of times people just don't realize, they don't know their worth. And that's another thing. I've got a value checklist. Those are things that I do when I work with people, is helping them recognize what their value is.
Yeah. I went through that earlier today, and it looked very, very useful, actually.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I actually have one that's a lot more, that goes a lot deeper. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things. I mean, there's some things that people are just taking for granted, even just being able to speak a language well, you know, there are people that can just listening, like having listening skills is huge. You'd be surprised at how valuable that is, because sometimes people just want to talk, and being there to just be able to listen is a skill. I mean, you know, we've got, you know, two ears and one mouth. But giving, how can you help? And maybe you might not be able to help directly, or at least you don't think you can help directly. But you know what? You know somebody, if you put your mind to it, that could probably help whoever you're talking to. Mm-hmm. So you know, you make that connection. You connect those nodes, as you said. So there's just so many ways that we could be giving. And you know what? You might not, whoever you're talking to, you might not be able to help them directly. But guess what, Ben? Just like when you and I first spoke, I think each of us was trying to outgive the other person. And there was an immediate connection that we formed, because we both knew that we were on the phone with someone who was a good person and who was happy to try to help us. So even if, I mean, you gave me great information and you were really helpful, so thank you. But even if you didn't, I would have just been, you know, I had a good feeling about that conversation. Mm-hmm. There's probably some oxycodone or whatever that's called it's relieved in your body that makes you feel good. And I had that, you know, after talking. So there's that good feeling there, that and then there's something called reciprocity.
Exactly. Yeah,
the six laws. So even if even if you were trying to help me, you know, in the back of my head I'm thinking, man, this guy, he was trying to help me, what can I do for him? It's just human nature. So, you know, let's kind of push off that karma, let's get that going. You know, you throw that into the ether, and a lot of just really good things will happen.
Let's talk a little bit about different ways in which you can network, because you said, well, you can go to these networking events, but that's not really networking necessarily. I suppose it depends on what event it is, but what are some of the ways that people can network a little bit more effectively?
Yeah, excellent question. There's a variety of ways. So it's funny because a lot of people are like, oh, I'm an introvert and I can't. Mm. And that's a cop out, because my argument is actually some of the best networkers I know are actually introverts. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go to a networking event. It doesn't have, I mean, that's just, I almost hate the term. It's kind of like a dirty word, but I mean, that is one. But if you do go to these events, you know automatically that everyone's there for the same reason. So just extend yourself. You know, mm-hmm. That's one. That's if you're in that environment, but there's a lot of other ways. There's something that I help people with. It's do like a 4-week gratitude challenge. And every week focus on, it could be either just reconnecting with people, and you could come right out and flat out say, listen, I'm doing this thing on gratitude, and I'm thinking about people in my life that I am really appreciative for. And I just wanted to tell you, this is something that, you know, you're someone in my life that came into my life, and for, you know, whether it was math class in eighth grade, and I remember you always helped me. And just sending that note, you put a smile on somebody's face, you've reconnected with somebody, and then now you've just kind of kickstarted a relationship. So that's one thing that you can do. And then that can serve you a lot of purposes, not necessarily just networking. I mean, you know, again, you're going to feel good. You can even put yourself out there too. Sometimes people even, you know, you talked about LinkedIn, you know, sometimes just answering questions in some of these groups, you're providing value. That's something you can do. There's something that I teach people to kind of put together kind of like a knowledge or like a mastermind text. And I don't know if you do this, but I got a bunch of different groups of people in text. I've got text groups from people from college. I've got text groups from high school. I've got text groups and you got some that are just funny. You know, we throw funny jokes. We've got others where if there's a work question, you know, we put it, you know, any kind of work question, it gets answered. And I've just got a variety of these types of groups, and it's an excuse to stay in touch with people. Mm-hmm. Then there's ones where you can set up as almost like a professional networking group, where you identify people that are that are high performers, but there's got to be diversity. The whole diversity is huge, and I'm not just talking about black, white. I'm talking about diversity. Again, I mean, it could be someone who is from Asia. It could be someone who's young, someone who's older. But you want to get somewhere between 5 to 10 people, and the whole idea behind it is it's strictly for networking. It's like an on-demand questions. So if anyone has any type of question, if you've got the right type of group, you can essentially get almost anything answered. And that's a way of creating, you know, that's a way of networking. There's so many ways. Again, getting back to the community that you're involved in, it's just solidifying those relationships, you know, talking to people, just going a little bit out of your way. There's a book by Adam Grant called Give and Take, and in it there's a gentleman by the name of Adam I forgot the guy's last name, but he's considered the most networked person on the planet. And what he encourages is a 5-minute favor. And anytime that somebody has an ask of some sort, if it takes him less than 5 minutes, how can he say no? And someone like that, I actually personally, after reading the book, I had reached out to him just to tell him I was impressed. And somehow this guy, and if you look up his bio, I mean, he's worth millions upon millions of dollars. He's done a lot, and I didn't ask for anything, but the guy got back to me. We've corresponded throughout the years, but if someone as busy and as successful as Adam can get back to me, just some guy, you know, how can't you or anybody else?
That's true. Yeah. And there's something about, I think you have to go into this the way you describe it with the most sincere of intentions, right? Because
yes,
otherwise it just becomes, you know, you're always just networking for utilitarian kind of purposes. I mean, there's a benefit, right? There's an output, there's a benefit that we get from having a good network, but just to do it, you know, because first of all, I'd get exhausted if I approached the world that way, because everything would feel like work, right? Yeah. So I'm doing this because maybe somewhere down the line, you know, Adam can help me in this. So that's why I'm talking to Adam today, right? Mm-hmm. If I did that with all of my interactions, by the end of the day, I'd be exhausted. Whereas, you know, if it's actually, well, you know, actually, you know, Adam sounds like an interesting guy and I want to, you know more about him. And, you know, this is fun, you know, I think the mindset is different. And that's what it sounds to me like you're advocating.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, you're not going to connect with everybody. Sure. It's just not, you just can't. There's only, you know, there's 16 different major high level personalities and mm-hmm. not everyone meshes. It's just reality. But identify the people that you like, trust, you admire and give them everything you got. And hopefully you never need anything. Mm-hmm. But when you do, they're there. And, you know, I can't begin to tell you how many people, you know, or I should say, let me rewind. There's a guy by the name of Harvey McKay, and he's awesome, and his stuff is great. And he wrote a book called Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. Mm. And it's just that saying alone, I think, sums it up. You know, hopefully you never need it, you know, and you don't. A lot of times you dig a good enough well, you don't need it. You live a conscience-free life. But my God, if you've done enough, you know, things do happen in life, and it's really nice when you've got that well.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What are some mm-hmm. of the common mistakes that people make when approaching networking?
Good segue. That was a great segue. And let's start with that. Mm-hmm. Starting when it's too late. Mm-hmm. How many times? You know, let's talk about that LinkedIn reach out that you got that someone mm-hmm. didn't even take the time to personalize, but they just hit you up on LinkedIn because they want that job. Or they want you, who you don't even know, to introduce them to somebody. Or they've just reached out to you. You haven't heard from them in 20 years. Yeah. And the only reason you're hearing from them in 20 years is because they see you're successful. And right now you've got something that they want. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's start there. and what I probably should have started with is really just not understanding what networking really is. That whole mindset of giving. You know, then there's also just, again, people being selfish and guarded. Okay, fine. So say that person from 20 years ago reaches out to you and you know what they're all about, but you know what, you're going to overlook it. They're in a tough spot and you know what, do what you can. Maybe you're not going to give them a 5-minute favor, but you give them a minute. You'll talk mm-hmm. to them. Hey, there's no job here, but you know what, here's a company that I could probably introduce you to. So that took a minute, mm-hmm. but a lot of people don't even do that. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There's not following through on a commitment. Mm-hmm. I can't begin to, I mean, that is a big pet peeve of mine. If you say you're going to do something, come through and do it, mm-hmm. You know, or under promise and over deliver. Mm-hmm. That's huge. You know, let's piggyback that with, you know, the simple gratitude of a thank you. So, right. You know, you got that. Okay. So you accepted that LinkedIn invite. You had that conversation. 9 out of 10 times, you're not even going to get a follow up. Hey, thank you. You know, and it's not that you're asking for it, but it feels good. Mm. And I can't begin to tell you, you know, how rare it happens. I know that I get the thank you, and I, you know, in talking with lots of other people, that's a huge pet peeve that they, you know, it really kind of turns them off. Same thing with you know, again, let's bring up LinkedIn again. That just clicking connect button and not personalizing it.
Right.
You know, that's you. Yeah. That, I mean, it's so disingenuous, you know, or just connecting for the sake of connecting. God, there's so many other things. Right. And then, you know, when it comes to networking, limiting your network. A lot of people just stick with their, you know, those friends from high school or maybe even just the friends from college. Mm-hmm. And you need to have more out there. You need that diversity, whether, again, it's that echo chamber effect, whether it's even just ideas, you know, then you're missing out on so many other things that are out there or in so many other jobs and maybe getting the right kinds of answers.
There's so many benefits of that as well, Adam, because mm-hmm. I think we're talking about making a tough ethical decision earlier. Actually, maybe not that tough ethical decision in that case, a rather easy one in the one that you described. But in, you know, other contexts, you know, having a diversity of opinion, you know, you interact with some people and you might share something and they say, oh, you sure you want to do that? Does that make a lot of sense? I think it's very valuable to have sort of, maybe we're talking a little bit more about critical friends than a network, but it's useful to have a diversity of opinions around.
Huge. I mean, for getting a job, whether it's expanding your business, getting mm-hmm. a more accurate view in the world, mm-hmm. Sharing information. I mean, do you know the story of, Paul Revere? Are you familiar with that? Did you ever hear that?
I do. I do. But, I have a huge amount of international or non-US listeners. So if you wanted to put a networking spin on it, that would be great.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So he was, sure. I think he was a blacksmith there was another. So when the British were coming to invade, there were him and this one other gentleman were told that they were coming. Mm-hmm. So what happened is, the other gentleman, I think he reached like 10 people and mm-hmm. they drove around on horses. But Paul Revere is the one that everybody knows about because his impact, he had built all of these different relationships up and down the coast. Mm-hmm. So what a relationship is, it offers you social capital, and social capital is essentially is the outcome of shared ideas and trust. And so when Paul Revere went around, people, A, he knew people and he knew the right people. But they also trusted his – when he said something was happening, they acted. And this other gentleman, the name eludes me, they didn't. They didn't know him and they didn't trust him. Hmm. And he was meaningless. So again, back to the sharing of the information, I just always think of Paul Revere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He had that impact. He had the influence. He knew the right people. Something that, you know what, that I forgot to mention and I think is just so imperative is a huge benefit of networking is actually health and happiness. Mm. And you might know this, but, your comrades in Europe, but in I think it was 2017, you guys enacted and hired a minister of health, or wait, no, there's a minister of loneliness.
Loneliness, correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that?
I don't know all the details, but it was a very interesting hire.
Do you know why? So stress has been called the kind of health epidemic of the 21st
that's
century,
right,
by the World Health Organization.
Yep.
And it's an epidemic that's going to be one of the most significant challenges that specifically businesses are facing over the next decade. It's threatening in engagement. It's threatening productivity, retention, and a big thing, at least over here in the United States, it's healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so people are lonely. They don't have that interaction. This technology has been awesome because it's spurred growth and it's done a lot of things and it's made our life easier. But what it's done is weakened personal connection. Mm-hmm. It's that connectiveness. They say that in order to kind of have to live a longer life, you really should have, outside of your direct, significant other, you should have three really go-to people that you can trust, that you can tell anything, that you can rely on. Three at minimum. And nowadays, the average person has less than one. And that happened quickly.
Right.
So it's good that Europe, in London, that you guys are ahead of that. That you've identified, that's identified. You guys are spearheading that, and it's huge, and I really hope other countries, follow suit.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We've never been lonelier and we've never been more connected, which is why this...
Superficially,
which is why this conversation is so important, I think, because, when you talk about your network, isn't just another LinkedIn connection. You're actually talking about, a real connection between two individuals that you think, that's important to foster and to create.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's how can you say it's really a network?
Agreed. Completely agree.
Yeah. When you talked about Paul Revere, I'm sure I've I've got some listeners, and part of me was just thinking as well, like, well, you know, there are some people who just, they're just naturally like that. And maybe it goes back to your introvert comment, you know, they connect with people a lot more easily. They have this big, you know, list of friends, you know, all of this sort of stuff. But I guess what you're saying is that networking is a skill. We could all be like that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen, some of it comes more natural to others. Is the extrovert more inclined? I would say superficially, yes, because maybe there'll be a little more. But really, all extrovert and introvert is just where you get energy from.
Right.
Yeah. So that's really the biggest difference, and it's people really don't understand what that means. Yeah. And I'm not going to get into psychology, but so are more people inclined? Yeah, there are some people, but it like you said, it is something that it takes work, and I don't know if it's really a skill. I mean, there are tips and tricks that you can have, but you know, it's you know, when meeting someone, something that I do if I've had a meaningful conversation with somebody, I write down what we talked about. Whether I meet him and I get a business card, you know, I'll write down things that we talked about that were, you know, not weather. I can't stand talking about the weather or people talk about their jobs unless they do something interesting.
Sure.
You know, I want to hear about something that they do. What are their passions? What really fires them up? You know, what projects are they working on that are cool? And that's something that I'll follow up on. You know, that's something or there's certain, listen, I do like sports. So maybe there's a certain team. You know, and if something happens with that team and I read about that, I'll follow. Oh, hey, did you hear about that? You know, today I came across this is pretty funny. So, you know, at least here in the States, there's this big divide with Dunkin' Donuts and oh, my God, what's it called? Starbucks.
Right.
So a great meme came up, and it was like, you know, how to drink Starbucks coffee. And it's the answer is dump it out and find a Dunkin' Donuts. So for example, so that one, I have got a bunch of people that I've met across the across the years that love themselves some Starbucks. Mm-hmm. So I probably sent that meme out to probably somewhere between 50 to 100 people today because I just thought that was I thought that was just funny, and I know they'd get a kick out of it.
Right.
So those are little things like tips and tricks that and it didn't take me much time. I'm thinking of you. It's something that I know is funny to you. And then, you know, I did it just to put a smile on people's face. But to be honest, a couple of people have already even reached out. Oh, hey, I saw what you're doing. How can I help you?
Right.
You know,
right.
That wasn't my angle. My angle at all.
Right.
But getting back to just the giving, and we all get caught up in our own worlds. I do it too. I'm not going to. Those who live in glass houses should not throw stones. So I do get that. But these are little things that we all can do.
Very good lesson. One of the things I started to do, and I know it's just basic and maybe, maybe some people find it a little cheesy or not, but when Facebook or LinkedIn gives you that, it's someone's birthday alert, I wish them a happy birthday. You're right. Oftentimes they'll say, "Oh, thank you. What are you doing? How are you doing? This sort of thing." And you reconnect on a short level, on a small, sometimes just a small level, but it's nice.
100%. It's a great. I love that. I actually stopped doing the birthday because I feel like Facebook ruined it for me.
Right.
But it is still. But it's still. But again, I maybe I should get back to that because we are all busy. So even just that 1 second to say a hello, and then it just reminds you, it reminds you of that person. Oh, wow. Thank you. It's just, again, it's just such a small thing to do.
Yeah.
And again, carve out, there's different things that people could do, whether it's carving out a few minutes a day, but maybe that's tough. So then maybe do 1 hour per week. And, maybe it is work for you. Mm-hmm. And no, that could very well be the case. You know what? Put in that work, dig that well, because, who knows when your kid's going to be needing to get into another school, or maybe your kid's going to get into another program, or maybe your kid is going to have a problem with a certain teacher. And you know what? Maybe if you know someone that knows that teacher, then that can help. That softens the introduction. That makes things easier. Or to have somebody that can triangulate on your behalf if you're getting a job. Because a lot of times people don't realize with the jobs, you know, there are background checks being done that you don't even know about.
Sure. Yeah.
There's that's going on. I can't begin to tell you how many times I've seen that, you know, again, getting back to the recruiting side, where people made calls, on someone else's behalf without them knowing. And if you it would really, it's to your benefit to have more people saying good things about you than not.
Right.
And it doesn't mean if you're not networking that they're going to say bad things about you, but if you have built some more relationships, the odds are going to be in your favor.
Sure. Well, it also goes back to your comment about reputation, you know, that it enters the door before you do, and it's important. And it's, you know, there's something just about being civil and being polite and being, you know, some things that we tend to, I think, as a society, lose some track of. I had one of the podcasts I'm going to have soon is a guy who did a documentary about internet trolls and, you know, where they come from and why they do what they do. And, you know, the fact that we've got anonymity and, you know, that's the flip side of this, that, you know, we've created this world where people feel like they can say anything to anyone, and they, you know, sometimes they do, and those are not nice things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, we live in a very interesting time. But what's heartening is to know that some of, you know, just connecting with people on an individual basis, you know, at least from the point of view that you're coming from, is valuable. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. It's also a way of managing risk, right? You never know, you say, you never know when you might be looking for a new job or also have an opportunity pop up.
I agree. And I love the theme, like the risk, because risk, it's funny. I think some of the greatest risks in life are those you don't take.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like flipping it upside down, because, you know, there's no certainty. The only, that quote, the only certainty is that nothing is certain.
That's right.
You know, so what can you do to, I guess, hedge that, if you will?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What prompted you to do this?
What prompted me? I suppose a series of things, but like you, for you, you know, people kind of connected you with everything that you did. And for me, I've had different roles and I've done different things, but risk and uncertainty have always connected those things for me. And I always felt that there's some great tools and things around risk and uncertainty for large corporates, but there isn't that much for just the rest of us, or just us as individuals, even. Mm. And I thought, well, let's explore that a little bit. So that's why I started doing this and get to speak to people like you. So actually, I'll send the tennis ball back into your court, which is, you talked a little bit about, you know, the biggest risks are some of the ones that we don't take. Do you have any other views or thoughts? I mean, you've done so many things, and like a lot of people who succeed, you know, you've failed at you know, or you've been involved in some ventures that for whatever reason haven't worked out, which is in my book a good thing, because it means you're venturing beyond your comfort zone. But do you have any thoughts or other philosophies on how you approach risk and uncertainty in your career?
I love it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love risk. I think, T.S. Eliot said, you know, only those who risk going too far can possibly find out how far one can go.
Mm-hmm.
I think risk is great. I just don't want to look back on life and say, oh man, I didn't do that. But, you know, because most people they're just afraid. And these are things like I tell my daughters, you know, this is very cliche. You hear it all the time, but it's just true. Fear is an acronym for a false expectation about reality.
Mm.
And you know, you don't know. Again, getting back to Jim Rohn, he was, you know, if you're not willing to risk the unusual, you'll have to settle for the ordinary. And I had a guy on my show, and he was super articulate, young kid, maybe 26 years old, and he told me one time he was in the, where'd he go? He went to a really good school. I think it was Amherst, and he went in. He was an athlete, and he realized, God, there's got to be more to this. And he locked himself in the library, and he came across this book that he was reading, and he got real deep on himself. And it's a really long passage, but essentially he was saying that how he interpreted this perspective of life is that unless you do something extraordinary, all you are doing is just living. You're going to die, and that's just your time. And you know, who's going to know you? Maybe your kids, and maybe you'll be talked about as a grand. But then after that, you're gone. Mm. Like what's your legacy? What have you done? What impact did you make? So to answer your question. Not that I'm doing anything wild and extraordinary. Well, hopefully I do, and hopefully that we can at least pass on, you know, through a few more generations something that we've done, some kind of impact that we've made. I hope I answered that
question. No,
I know I rambled a bit.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You certainly did, and we all have our, you know, different levels of tolerance to risk and uncertainty. But I personally agree with you. There's I sometimes talk about my listeners will have heard this before, but the zone of regret versus the zone of disappointment. So zone of regret being where you want to stay away from. You know, I didn't do this, or why did we do this? Or it could be that you did something that wasn't really a risk, but was just a straight out gamble. But you want to stay away from that. And the zone of disappointment is, you know, I tried this. I knew the risks. It didn't work out. I'm disappointed, but you know, I'm glad I tried. So
yeah. Oh yeah, and they hurt. They sting. Don't get me wrong. I've had a ton that they didn't work. But it's almost like what's the sales saying? You know, each no gets me closer to the right yes.
Right.
You know, something to that effect. So yeah, you find your zone. You know, as long as you're not hurting people or really you know, dramatically hindering your life, there's a lot that can come out of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least in my opinion.
Absolutely. Well, I feel like we can keep going, but I want to be respectful of your time. I did want to, maybe before we do go, is just if you could perhaps share a little bit more about NetworkWise and what it is where you'd like the concept and the organization to go. I think that'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. So NetworkWise, it's NetworkWise. NetworkWise, that's the name of my company. But what I also have is I've got a podcast similar to yours, mm-hmm. and it's called Conversations with Connors. And mm-hmm. Ben, I'm going to put it out there on the, on this now. I'd really like you to be a guest because
I'd love to. Yeah.
Good.
Twist my arm. Yeah. No, yeah, I'd love
all
to.
Right, good. So, the concept of my podcast is about getting really good people on that are successful and can attribute a cornerstone to their success to their network. And when I identify success, I identify success as someone that lives a life by design, not necessarily by default.
Yes, yes.
Meaning that, you know, you could be, you could be a porter. And if that's what you want it to be, then good for you. You know, like that's what you want it to be. You want it to be in sports. It just doesn't matter. It's you're living the life that you want it to live. And if you're a good person and you can tell me about that, on how the relationships that you've developed have contributed to your happiness, then you're a good candidate for my show. Hmm. So, and the idea behind the show was to really pull in more listeners and more people that are interested in self-improvement and making themselves better and hopefully kind of changing their mindset to one of giving and one of networking, so that, again, this whole domino effect of kind of creating a better place, helping people get jobs, making people happier. So NetworkWise, what I do is I do group coaching. I don't do individuals, but I'll do group coaching, you know, 20 people or more. I go in and I speak in organizations. I speak in corporations. I speak in nonprofits. I speak in schools. Mm-hmm. And then what I will be doing, and I have not done yet because I am in the early stages of setting this up, is putting together seminars where I'll be bringing in other experts, not just myself, but essentially kind of, really helping people get what they want. And what I say that I do at NetworkWise is I essentially expedite the outcomes I expedite outcomes for people in sales. I expedite outcomes in people's careers and expedite outcomes in helping people find happiness through teaching them the art and science of networking.
Very cool. There was, as you were speaking there, and as we were talking about, you know, the power of networking, you talked about sports as well. And there was, I thought it was a football coach, American football coach, who sort of said, you know, the more I practice, the luckier I get. I think it was Lou Holtz, was it? Do you know?
From Notre Dame.
Yeah. And and it strikes me that you're teaching people, you know, this whole, all of this stuff about networking. It is a practice. So, you know, and again, risk and uncertainty, you're giving people more, you know, more dice to roll in a positive sense, you know, more things that could kind of somehow serendipitously land in their laps. And as you say, you know, that accelerates the outcomes they're looking for.
That's it. And before we go, something very funny that, and again, I don't know if you meant to do this or not, but speaking of Lou Holtz, he is going to be someone that I'm going to be putting I've got a Hall of Fame of networking, you know, like Paul Revere would be one, and Henry Ford and people like that. But actually Lou Holtz is going to be on my Hall of Fame, and his story is pretty cool on how he became the coach of Notre Dame. He was just this lowly little assistant. And I don't want to steal the thunder of the website when I get it finished with him up there, but his story is really, his story of ascension is through networking. So really cool that you used his as a quote without knowing that.
Complete chance, you know, risk, uncertainty, randomness, it was just complete chance. But somehow, because we're sort of connected and looking at the same stuff and, you know, whatever, maybe the chances of that happening were a little higher than we thought.
You would know.
We don't know, but this is great. Adam, you really appreciate this. And as I said, very happy to return the favor. Before we go, was there anything that you wanted to cover that we didn't get a chance to?
No, you were good, man. You're great questions. You really, you know, kudos to you. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love them. It's all about learning and making yourself better. But you asked excellent questions. They segued. I thought that was great. I really appreciate it. I feel like you've kind of raised the bar on me here. In the spirit of full candor, I'm a little nervous.
No. Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate that. It does mean a lot. But thanks so much once again. And we'll set something up. And happy to I'd be honored to come on to your show.
Awesome. Make it a great day, man.
All right. Bye for now. Man, isn't Adam great? I hope you enjoyed that and found it useful. And perhaps after listening to Adam, you might want to try connecting with someone and maybe help them out. And maybe you can do that for a few weeks and see what happens. See what happens with your network. And I'd love to hear from you after you do that. allthingsrisk@gmail.com is the best place to get in touch about the show, about suggestions you might have for guests, anything else. Check out the show notes as usual. And as I also say in each and every episode, visit allthingsrisk.co.uk, that's .co.uk, and find all the ways in which you can subscribe. We will be back soon in the interim. And as always, don't forget, risk is life.